Hey there. My name's Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table's a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is an edited version of something that we call the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with the hope that it can be a positive catalyst and encouragement to you in your own explorations. In our experience, exploring what we believe can sometimes be hard work, and we don't think anybody should have to do that alone. We're able to offer this because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond a local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com. Thanks for dropping by.
We'll get started. Do you have the questions? Because I realized with the recording, I can't look at them.
I do. Easily. And this is good because I actually wanted to ask you the first question.
Awesome.
First. Yes. Okay. So... our first question, how would you describe the impact of the pandemic on you personally, and how did that evolve over the 3 years?
Wow. So I wrote in the blurb that, you know, I had actually just started a brand new job, and then I was sick as the pandemic started, so I couldn't go anywhere. So it was very weird, just weird. On the other hand, I think I felt like, because I had learned a lot about dealing with trauma and coping with my own trauma, that I was good at this. And at the time, like, I think for the first 3 months, I actually did pretty well, like, okay. You know, I noticed my emotions, I accepted my emotions, and then I you know, dealt with them. As a person who lives by themselves... you know, the living by yourself and not being able to be within 6 feet of another human grew old very, you know, after, because I think in the summer we kind of had a bit of meh, we were doing whatever we wanted that first summer. I mean, we'd had less than 200 cases here, right? So it got really hard. Particularly like that Christmas 2020 when we were in full lockdown, I spent Christmas by myself. And it really was tough in a lot of ways. Fortunately I had a lot of, I have access to counseling. I have access to other supports. One of the things I did, I went for a massage like every 2 weeks because it wasn't locked down. Yeah, exactly. And I literally told that massage, I'm like, you're the only person who gets within 6 feet of me right now. Like, yeah. it was crazy. So, you know, finding ways to try and get bits of what I needed, was really important. You know, and I was privileged in a way. We talked about COVID privilege at the pandemic privilege, I think, at the beginning of the pandemic. And I had that privilege. I was technically an essential worker, but I was an essential worker who could work from home. So that, you know, I had an easier time of that. I didn't get COVID until this January. So, that was helpful. The other thing I would say is being alone as much as I was taught me things about myself I didn't know, or helped me notice things I didn't know. A year and a half ago or so, I was diagnosed as autistic and ADHD. Mm. I just started noticing those things. I naturally started unmasking because I was by myself. That's one thing that kind of, I don't think I would have figured that out had it not been for the pandemic.
Would you feel free to say an example of what you noticed that was?
A couple of things I noticed as things started to open up, it was very difficult to re-engage, and yeah. Sensory-wise, yeah. Things bugged me, right? Being in large, loud groups and all, like I knew I never wanted to do that, but it was, you know, sensory issues are if you have a sensory disorder or whatever you want to call it, are actually felt like in the same places as the brain feels pain. right? So it's like pain. And so I noticed on, you know, social media, all of the things for neurodiverse people, like the tips, I'm like, yeah, that works. I'm going to do that thing. It was kind of interesting. And one of the things, particularly with autism, is it's much underdiagnosed in women. So that was why I had taken a test years ago and I didn't score high. And it was like, yeah, because I didn't play with trans, right? Like things like that. So, and I noticed like I would narrate my life in song. I would just make noises and it felt good. And I enjoyed that. And once I had the freedom to do that, it was, you know, those were my stims, as you call them, right? Yeah. My stims weren't necessarily physical, but vocal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. And how about you?
Well, when I think about the first, I would tend to feel like not I cruised through it, but I do think I had that sense of, I think I'm handling it better than a lot of people are, especially when it first started. For me, there's both circumstances within and without. So within, I am an introvert. I mean, I can spend tons and tons of time alone before I feel like I need to connect with another person. But the fact was also that I wasn't alone. Like, I live with at least one of my children. I say at least because, like, it's complex. Like, one of my kids lives with me all the time. One of my kids goes back and forth between me and his dad. And then another kid lives on her own, but I'm her washing machine and dryer and everything, you know, else. So she, and for that, for my oldest kid who does live on her own, she was also, like, we became part, basically, her only, part of her bubble once she was allowed to do that as well. So I wasn't alone a lot. The other thing that I had already decided to do when COVID hit was I had made plans to take my master's degree online. So no matter what, I would have been holed up in my room alone doing a lot of work. Yeah. So I didn't really feel like it changed that much in terms of my life. The other outward thing is just that I had also come through the absolute worst time of my life just before COVID. Like, my divorce came through in 2019 and then COVID hit in 2020. So I had this level of comparison. It's like, I got through that. I can get through anything. Like, that was pretty awful. COVID just didn't feel like that big of a deal in comparison. The other thing is, because I'm a counselor, and cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the main tools that I use in my job, I think that's become pretty ingrained in me. And I noticed a tendency, I think, around me for people to kind of catastrophize it and go, oh, this is so horrible. It's like, well, you know, you have enough food to eat, and I can't say nobody's dying. People were dying. But for most of us, we had a lot of our needs met. The government kicked in and actually did quite a bit to keep people going. So I felt like there was a bit of catastrophization, and I just wasn't a part of that. Now, that's not to say that, like I said, I feel like I breezed through it. There was no down times, because there was. I found frustration with boredom. I was still working. I hadn't started my personal counseling practice, so I was still working for another agency. My job had been traveling to different reserves all over Manitoba to do family support work, and we were grounded. And we were supposed to carry on with all of our support work by video or phone. Not easy. Either people did not have access to technology. For sure, video for almost all my clients was absolutely out. They just didn't have the bandwidth in their communities. Or they didn't have the financial capability of having internet service. Even phone can be a fairly rare thing for a lot of people. So a lot of my clients did not even have a phone. So that meant I couldn't keep in contact with them. It always felt like I was looking for something to do and to earn my keep of the money I was being paid. And that was really frustrating. And I think one of those things was a loss of meaning. Another thing that I found within my work, as I've learned about positive psychology, is the idea of what are the ways we actually find happiness and contentment and well-being. And one of the main things that's important to us as humans is a sense of meaning and purpose to our life. And I lost that. And that was really frustrating. But then another thing then that happened was through the process was the regaining of meaning. As I started to question things and realize what do I want to do for the rest of my life, things like that, I started to regain that and find my way into self-employment, like massage therapy. I could keep working. I was considered an essential worker. So, founding my way back to meaning as well. Yeah.
So do you think society has changed?
Yes, I do. Jumping into our next question. Making me go first this time. Okay. I have seen society change in a few different ways, one of which, I mean, we could talk about a lot of the things that people say in terms of polarization and cancel culture and this growing sense of tribalism that seems to be a part of the COVID, and whether COVID caused it or kind of ignited I was talking to a client about this the other day, because he was saying how much he feels like things shifted over the pandemic and just how much that kind of rancor was bothering him. And we kind of came up with this analogy of, though, it does feel like though there was a gas leak already there, but COVID like lit a match. There was something that was growing and COVID just exploded it. And so when I think about that, we've all heard this stuff about polarization, but in the last couple of weeks, I heard a couple of different people talking. I wish I could attribute to who has these thoughts, because I cannot remember which podcast I heard them off of. But the two elements that people were talking about were certainty and curiosity. That the one person felt like this idea of certainty has become so sure in people. Like we know that we're right. We know that we are thinking about things absolutely correctly. And everybody else who doesn't agree with us, they're evil, they're wrong, they're fool-headed, like something like that. But there's this absolute certainty. And when you don't have, when you have certainty, you don't have curiosity. Because if I'm right, why would I be curious about anybody else's viewpoint? If I'm right, why would I bother to listen to anybody else? And so I think those things are, you know, they didn't die, but they're certainly at critical levels. the feeling that we are so certain. And I really found that interesting being, you know, in part of this community, because I think the table evolved out of an idea of letting go of certainty and being curious. And so it's an interesting juxtaposition for me that I kind of guided my spiritual life into this place, and then I find myself in a culture that seems to be really against those two things, no matter where you are on the political spectrum or the belief ideology, anything. I don't think it's about certain people have certainty and lack of curiosity and other people don't. I just think it's endemic all over the place. So that's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing?
It's interesting when you mention being right. I had a thought about, and one of the things I noticed in the way I'm wired is I always want to try and do things right and do the right thing. And it was really hard to know what the right thing was, you know? And it was really hard to, like, balancing the right thing for me with the right thing for everybody else. And, and what was right. And a lot of the times I chose, you know, like sticking right to the restrictions at a really tough cost, you know, being by myself all the time.
Yeah.
So that was interesting, and just being really annoyed by people who weren't. And then at some point I got over it, got rid of that. So my day job is as an IT director. So through the lens of business, one thing I noticed is people are still a lot more open to talk about mental health. And a lot more candid about how they're doing and just having real conversations about those things. A year ago, we were talking about the Great Resignation, meaning people were, you know, leaving their jobs to do new and, you know, either entirely different things or getting these really sweet jobs, you know, Silicon Valley salary, living in Regina. And even 6 months ago, I would have said that was still a thing that is slowing down. Supply chain issues are still a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to know. Like, there's a war in Ukraine. So it's kind of interesting. The things I thought had changed for sure, forever, it seems to be going back. I really do hope we keep, you know... at least the ability to talk. And I'm glad that we're no longer talking about, you know, I have a cousin who is very strongly anti-vax.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like, well, what do I do? Like, I can't disown my cousin.
Well, you could.
Right? Well, I could, but, you know, like, she's the connection to family. I'm not going to. And so... Yeah, you know, a lot of that.
Is that the only thing that keeps you from disowning her, though? The connection to family?
Well, no. I mean, she's a good person.
Yeah.
Overall, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she's a good person. She's trying to take care of her kids. She's trying to do the right thing. You know. And I look at it through the lens of, you know, the powers that be did not do right by that part of my family a lot of the time. So I get it. So
you can see different influences on her.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how, you know, you haven't pigeonholed her into a role.
Right.
Yeah,
that it's really interesting. I think you know, a lot of things opened my eyes in the pandemic.
Yeah.
In terms of I think the other thing that's happening for me, too, is I've learned to say no. And not just no to please come here, but it's like, or please do this with me. It's no to, like, what you think I don't believe in, and you can still exist in my world, but no. In a lot of areas, you know, even kind of more leftist folks, it's like, no, I don't believe what you're saying. It doesn't work, you know.
Mm.
If you disown someone who triggers you, everybody who triggers your trauma, like, how do you have friends? So,
I remember doing a thought exercise and going, like, if I think through, like, all the major people in my life, and even some of the minor ones, is there anybody that I can say, like, we are just 100% the same in terms of how we see things and look at things? And I couldn't think of anybody who was like that. Like, there's significant differences between mm-hmm. me and almost everybody I know, including my own children. And that actually shouldn't be a surprise to us. I mean, children are to grow up quite different from us.
How dare they?
Yes. Sometimes it feels like that, though. Like, how dare you not be the person that I was hoping you would be? I feel like there's one thing I want to say.
About,
I just came up with this awesome, I think, quote. I think this is mine. I don't think I wrote this down because I don't have quotation marks about this. In the efforts to make sure no one experiences harm, we have clamped down on the smallest kinds of misunderstandings that have been punitive with people who transgress ever-changing rules. The result is a culture of hypervigilance and ever greater anxiety, and that is having an awful effect on our mental health. Mm-hmm. So you had said earlier that you feel like there was a bit of a more understanding of our mental health, which I think is true. I saw that happening, and I think I benefited from that. And because I chose to start a counseling practice during COVID, wow, like people were just ripe and ready to explore their own mental health. But I feel like the overall culture is having a really bad effect on our mental health. It's spurring on anxiety. So that's what I'm seeing. So, another question.
Okay.
What are the places you found resilience?
So, I knew the questions ahead of time because we talked about them. Mm-hmm. I have things to say about resilience.
Good.
You know what? Everybody has always said to me, oh, you're so resilient. You're so strong. You get through things and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I shouldn't say blah, blah, blah. But I appreciate that they see the strength, but what they miss is the need. And I am learning that resilience is built by figuring out what I need and finding a way to get those needs met somehow. And it's not always instant. You know, I can't always, find connection the second I need it. But recognizing that something has happened and being in tune with that and just going, ooh, I'm worked up. And like, you know, there's really no point, and I do this all the time. There's really, like, it's really not helpful to have shame about shame or have feelings about your feelings. Like, it's like, oh, I'm all worked up. Why am I sad again? Blah, blah, blah. I think I learned that during the pandemic. I'd be like, it's there. And one of the influencers I follow, a counselor I follow on Insta, was talking about, you know, one of the self-acceptance hacks she has, or self-compassion hacks, is going, no wonder. Like, I'm sad. Well, no wonder I'm sad. This happened. Mm. It's like, huh. And that doesn't mean I have to stay in the sadness or I have to hold on to said sadness forever. It's just like, oh, well, that was a challenging day. No wonder I'm feeling a little frazzled. Let's just take care of that.
Yeah.
Good old weighted blanket. So to me, resilience is more about finding, noticing, figuring out what you need, and addressing that. So I found, like, even during the pandemic, my ups and downs were, or my, you know, downs were not forever. Like, I didn't stay in those depths. I figured out what I needed and reached out and addressed it somehow, whereas before I would just be like, well, this is my life now.
Yeah.
And you know, so figuring that out and just figuring out what's helpful for you and what's not,
yeah,
has been huge for me.
Counselor I know through online spaces has asked me to recently review a book that he read so he could like just have some people right away on Amazon. And so it was a book on relationship advice for men. And I was really surprised. One of the very first chapters was say what you want. Mm. And what you were saying about like letting people actually saying, this is what I need. And, mm-hmm. you know, similar principles, need, want, they're a little bit different, but just the idea of actually saying that, actually telling people, I think it feels so basic. But it's not, because it obviously isn't. It's simple in the sense of you can do it. It's not simple in the sense that for some reason it's not easy for us to do. Mm-hmm. We're very hesitant. So I kind of love what you said about just letting people know your need. In terms of my places of resilience, I've already mentioned the CBT principles, the being able to like look at the thoughts that are coming out of my head and to go, okay, am I making a bigger deal of this? Am I starting to label things as black and white? Am I starting to minimize the good that is here and like make mountains out of molehills. I think that's been really important for me. I'm not sure if I could ask you about this, because I think you and I have had a bit of an opposite experience here. I have had luck finding online oases, as in oases, okay. In terms of when I feel like there's been too much around me that has gone into that place of certainty and lack of curiosity, to find places online where uncertainty can be a principle people still embrace and curiosity is still reigning. And so that has really helped me to feel like I'm not alone.
Mm.
And I don't know if you, like,
It's kind of funny, because one of the things about 2020 is I started coming to the table because I wanted to find some in-person connection in this spiritual, or whatever you call it, space. But after I had left my previous church, I dove headfirst into online deconstruction spaces. And those spaces really were a place of refuge for a very long time. And I was so glad I had them during the pandemic.
Yeah.
What happened, though, is I think it's difficult for you to stay in any place that's kind of based on grief, really.
Mm.
And because we were all coming from different places, and we weren't really talking about deconstruction anymore. We were, you know, when you deconstruct from faith, people, you know, discover that they are, you know, have a new gender, or that they're, you know, they have all of these things they've discovered about themselves that they want to explore, but they're not finding safety in this online space anymore because we're all so diverse and not in person.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I am grateful for that space. It imploded epically last fall.
Yeah.
And, but that was when I learned to say no. I was like, no, I'm not, no. I mean, and I look at, you know, counseling kind of different than you, or like I've had a different experience, right? CBT was marginally effective for me.
Okay.
EMDR and those kind of things were more effective, and trauma counseling and that kind of thing. But the danger, I've discovered this, the danger with a diagnosis like complex trauma or complex PTSD is that for me that meant, your whole life was trauma. It was like, oh, or your whole childhood. And you stop seeing nuance. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I really value what the folks that talk about trauma brought and show us that, you know, we're living in a world where maybe that is inherently traumatic. At the same time, you know, I'm working on decentering trauma.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of that online space became about trauma bonding, and it was just not healthy. It was hard to walk away from it and to feel like I was doing the right thing, or, you know, and I became the bad person because I was an administrator and I wouldn't throw people out and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, here, you guys take it. And then it exploded. So I'm like, do what you want. I still have connections with some of those people.
Yeah.
But I lost a lot of online friends through that, and it's unfortunate. And
yeah.
I truly believe if we had been able to meet and talk through it in person, it would have been an entirely different thing. That said, I just finished yoga teacher training, and that was entirely online.
Mm.
And we are, you know, we still chat on WhatsApp, and so I feel a connection to the people in that cohort, and we're, I think the thing way we're connecting is just much more healthy. So, yeah. I noticed.
Yeah, I love the way that you use the word nuance, because I feel like I find myself using that word more and more over time to be able to see the nuance of different places and issues. And through that, I also love what you said about just, you still recognize the good you found mm-hmm. in that place while you could. And I think that's an important part of it too. It's a CBT principle, believe it or not.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, seeing things as not as black and white, but shades of gray complexity. Mm-hmm.